It's Weekends on All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Jackie Lydon. One day in the spring in the early 1970s, a young American named David Easterly had one of those life-changing moments. Visiting a London church, he looked up at botanical garlands made of wood, flowers that seemed to hover in the air. This was the work of Grinling Gibbons, a carver who lived between 1648 and 1721. Gibbons was said to be the greatest woodcarver of all time. Today, his work can be seen at St. Paul's Cathedral, Hampton Court, and other British landmarks. Easterly, who was at the time a scholar at Cambridge University in England, trained himself to carve in the Gibbons style. He has a new exhibition opening later this week in Manhattan, as well as a new book called The Lost Carving, A Journey to the Heart of Making. The book begins when he learns that a fire has destroyed a precious part of Gibbons' adornment at Hampton Court.
I went into a state of grieving at this point, and I wrote a sort of an obituary for the carvings and sent it off to a London weekly journal where it was published. And then I started receiving these wonderful phone calls from the palace authorities saying, no, actually, extraordinarily enough, the carvings had basically survived. There were two or three which were badly damaged in parts, and only one carving that was completely destroyed, mm-hmm. which was a 7-foot-long drop which flanked a painting over a door in the King's drawing room, as it was called.
And that becomes the carving that you eventually will recreate. But it wasn't a straight line. At first, somebody calls you up and you said it was a great indignation. They wanted a British carver and not an American carver.
Well, yes, I thought I was poised to be given the job, but there was a small group among the authorities who felt that they should be encouraging British carvings. I was really just about the only person who was doing this kind of work full-time for a living from scratch. It was a small field then, and it's a small field now. As a matter of fact, Jackie, you are talking to the field. The field is in this room, sitting on this chair.
You know, that becomes something that sort of is the elegiac part of this. You will be able to restore the lost carving. However, one of your other aspirations was that you would also ignite the imaginations of other people to carve, to learn as you did. You had to learn trial and error, ruining a lot of wood. There isn't anyone really around. You meet a couple of old carvers, but they're not your teachers. And you have all these wonderful things you say about carving, that it's the art of subtraction, that wood carvers revere the god of unseen effort, but they're also unseen. Why are you the only one?
You know, there's a phenomenon with carving, which is probably true of other things as well. You can achieve 90% of the effect with 50% of the effort. But the truth is, unless you do the final 10%, which takes another 50% of effort, you'll never achieve that fineness that, which is necessary if it's going to, you know, raise the hairs in the back of your neck. So it's a killingly time-consuming occupation.
Let's go back to Hampton Court. It's going to take you about a year to make this piece, and it's a lovely year. You're commuting down from Hampstead in London every day. You describe it as another world when you open the gate. But human considerations being what they are, it's also in some ways kind of a stormy time.
It was stormy. I mean, I had certain ideas about how the carving, for example, should be presented. Gibbons always left his carving completely plain, and limewood is the palest wood in the forest.
Almost white, like frosting. It looks kind of like frosting.
Absolutely. Ghostly pale. And it was attached to darker oak paneling. And the effect of this ghostly, delicate carving floating above the darker paneling was astonishing. It was much commented on in Gibbons' time. It was a real innovation. So I felt it was necessary to the appearance of the carving. And we had tremendous battles over how the carving should appear. You know, most of us think of wood as brown. We're accustomed, I suppose, because of the influence of the Victorians, to think of it as brown. And I couldn't overcome that resistance in the end.
David Easterly, you have learned to carve with a long-dead master at your side. There's this invisible, long-departed Grinling Gibbons. Did he make you a better carver?
Well, he certainly did, yes. You know, when I first saw Gibbons' work at close quarters, I visited the palace shortly after the fire and got up on a scaffolding and for the first time saw Gibbons' work close up. I nearly came out in hives. I was so astonished by the flamboyance of his modeling and by the fineness of his cutting and undercutting. And then I went back to my workshop in upstate New York and stood at my desk, I remember, with my hands on my hips, and looked down at my own work. And I felt almost a sense of despair, because I thought I had carved my leaves, for example, with a holographic accuracy. You know, I would bring a leaf in from outside and put it on the workbench, and I'd copy it. But you know something? They look like wooden leaves, as opposed to Gibbons's inaccurate leaves, which look like real leaves. And it was the first lesson that he taught me. There always has to be a translation into this new medium, and that you could only make a wooden leaf look like a real leaf by certain selective exaggerations. So even this very realistic form of art actually is artificial in its way.
When your year was finished and you had created this beautiful 7-foot drop, this rope of botanicals that you were working from charred lumps of wood to reconstruct, and a very hazy photograph that you had blown up to scale, were you satisfied with the way it was mounted and presented?
Well, no, because of course it was darkened to look like the other carving, which had darkened over the years. And so, no, I was not happy. As a matter of fact, I didn't go out of my way to see it on the wall.
Maybe someday they will lighten these pieces at Hampton Court in the way that Gibbons would have intended.
I'm hoping so. I'm hoping that people will someday see the carvings as William III saw them, as these celestially white garlands that looked as if they'd been gathered in heaven. So no, I haven't given up hope.
Well, David Easterly, it's been a great pleasure talking to you. David Easterly joined us to talk about his new book, The Lost Carving, A Journey to the Heart of Making. David, thank you so much.
It's my pleasure.